Well, you probably heard at least some of the debate and controversy about efforts to encourage energy efficiency, and also conversation about things like trading carbon credits and cap and trade. Maybe you've heard that. That's one variation of the concept. But does this concept work in the real world? And maybe just as important, how does it work in the real world? This morning on Perspectives, we'll find out as we look at what's going on right now in the capital city area. It's something called the Community Carbon Fund, and our panel will tell us what it's all about, and we'll also take your calls and emails, too. You are always welcome as part of the conversation right here on Perspectives, but we'll do that right after the news with Ronald J. Evan. Good morning. Welcome to Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Hey, by now, most folks seem to agree that saving energy and the money it takes to buy that energy is probably a good thing. Let's see. I'm looking for a show of hands. Does anyone disagree with that? No, of course not. But is there a way to encourage energy conservation and its all-important byproduct, reducing greenhouse gas emissions, beyond the month-by-month impact on the electric bill? Are there ways to do that? Well, this morning on Perspectives, we'll look at one way. It's a local motivator called the Community Carbon Fund. We'll find out how that works and what it's doing to make energy efficiency even more attractive and affordable in the real world. So let's welcome our panel to Perspectives this morning. Let's start off with Debbie Gibson from Sustainable Tallahassee and a member of the coordinating committee that got all this going and also helped to facilitate this program. And thank you very much, Debbie, and thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you for letting me be here.
And we'll talk a little bit about how Sustainable Tallahassee dovetails with all of this.
Okay.
Heading around the table, we also say hi to, from the City of Tallahassee, Environmental Resource and Energy Policy Department, Venus Childs. Thanks for coming out, Venus.
Thanks for inviting me.
We were talking real world, so we're going to be getting some input on how this all works in the real world from Pastor Amanda Nichols from Grace Mission Episcopal Church, because her church is involved with the Community Carbon Fund and is kind of on the receiving end of some benefits from that. So thanks for coming out, Reverend. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's glad to be here.
And we'll give you a chance, too, to talk about what the church is all about in just a moment, okay? Lee Jones, also from the City of Tallahassee. If you call up the city and ask for an energy audit, you'll probably be dealing with this guy in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Thanks for coming out, Lee.
Glad to be here.
Okay. So, Debbie Gibson, what the heck is a community carbon fund?
I found out last night talking to Steve Erse, who's actually the person that was supposed to be here. He said, well, do you know how the Carbon Fund started? And I really didn't know. It turns out Larry Peterson, who was on the board of Sustainable Tallahassee, brought a proposal to the board in May of 2010. He was aware of different communities who had started carbon funds with the idea that they could invest in businesses and organizations within the community to lower the electric usage and thereby save the carbon that would be generated from the more inefficient uses. There was one in Cleveland that he specifically knew about, some in San Francisco and other places. And the board then took the idea out. They had a small group that explored the feasibility of this and went out, talked to different people, and the board ended up adopting it. The city of Tallahassee became one of the founding partners, and we began the carbon fund to encourage people to look at how much carbon they contribute to the atmosphere and offset that by investing in the carbon fund, which can then be used in ways within our community to lower the demand for electricity.
Okay. That brings to mind the question I had about, well, do individuals pay into it? Is it like a tax? Do I figure, oh, gosh, I probably, in the energy that I consume at my home every year, use X number of pounds, tons of carbon, and then I'm assessed a charge for that, and it goes into a bank, and then someone uses less carbon, and they can take that money. How does this work?
Well, you don't have to guess how much carbon. My understanding is that Sustainable Tallahassee, along with the City of Tallahassee and Leon County, actually contracted with Mark Van Sustenberger in Gainesville. I'm blocking right now on the name of his group, but they ended up developing a carbon calculator using the information that they got from the City of Tallahassee about how much energy is used to generate a kilowatt hour. The carbon calculator is actually online. My understanding is it's on the city's website, it's on the county website, and it's at Sustainable Tallahassee. I got involved in this project because 2 years ago, January 1st, I was doing my New Year's resolutions, and I thought, okay, I'm going to figure out how much carbon I use, and I'm going to go ahead and donate. So it's a voluntary thing. You are actually making an investment in saving the carbon that you are generating through efficiencies in someone else's use. I have spent a lot of time trying to get my usage down. I drive a Prius. I keep one light on in the house. That's wherever I am. I mean, I do everything I know how to do, with the exception of keeping my heat low in the winter, being cold. Although I do keep it really low. I turn it down to 50 when I go to bed. But the carbon calculator let me know. I was able to take the energy usage that I got from my smart bill. They give you a year's worth of usage. So I told them how much electricity was involved in my house during the year, how much gas I use, because I have invested in a gas dryer, gas water heater, you know, all the appliances that I could are gas. And then I also put in the amount of miles I drive in my car and what mileage I get typically for that automobile. And then I also had to put in the amount of trips that I took on an airplane. So that particular year, I had taken a retirement trip to Europe with my daughter. So when I put the numbers in, the calculator actually told me how much carbon that had generated into the environment. And then using the figure that the carbon calculator had at $14 a ton, I was able to contribute enough money to offset the carbon I had, and it went into a fund that the City of Tallahassee has invested in and other people within the community. And we use that money now for projects, and that's what we're here today to talk about, is the exciting project we've done with Grace Mission.
Well, that's a perfect segue then to Reverend Amanda. And before we talk about the project, for those unfamiliar with Grace Mission Church, what do you guys do? What is your ministry like?
Well, Grace Mission has been around for 15 years. A lot of people don't know that. So we're not a new mission. I'm new. I've only been there, actually, it'll be 2 years, July 4th. What we do is we reach out and we help those that are often forgotten in society, people that are homeless or facing homelessness, the underemployed, the uninsured, people that are living below the poverty line but may have a home through assistance. And we try to help alleviate some of the burdens that they may be experiencing, as well as providing some a safe place for them to come and comfort. We serve about, actually our number just went up, 2,500 hot meals a month we served last month. We have a after-school program for children 2 days a week, as well as a Bible study program for them on Thursday nights. We have showers, laundry facilities, adult literacy. We also are a church, and so we also believe that it's our responsibility to be good stewards of our environment and our community. And so once a month, we also go out and we do outreach within the Frenchtown area. And, of course, these are the least of these, meeting with their friends and the least of these out in public in areas that we go to. And we take cold water. Water is a very tough commodity for somebody that's homeless to get because they're often not welcome in restaurants or gas stations or properties. And so we take cold water out. In cold months, we take hot coffee and hot soup. We pray for people. And we also do what we call adopt a lot. We go around, we pick up all the garbage in the community. And so that's just some of the things that we're doing. We have other new initiatives we're hoping to get to as well this year.
Okay, so not a church that is open on Sunday and perhaps Wednesday and the rest of the time everything's shut down. You guys are in operation a lot.
Yeah, we're actually open 7 days a week. The one day that actually Grace is kind of closed is Monday, but we're also planting a church. We're helping to plant a church. It's called Downtown Community Church. And this is a young pastor who's reaching out to college students, but also has a real passion for the poor and the homeless, and so we're supporting them in that.
So how'd you get involved in this entire community carbon fund thing? You're trying to lower energy usage, obviously, because of the fact that you are open almost around the clock and 7 days a week, but how did you get into this?
Well, I've always been interested in solar and ways that we can use less energy in our own lives, either personally or corporately, in the case of the church. When I saw the building, of course, we have this great flat roof and the sunshine, and being from Chicago, it's, of course, wonderful here. And I thought, wow, this would be a great building to maybe do something with solar. And so I really just started kind of praying about that. And it's really funny because I met Debbie at a Christmas alternative market that we participate in. And in prayer, she just came to the back door. I don't know if there was an appointment that was made. But anyway, she came to Grace. And I'm like, I know her. What do I know her from? And then it clicked. And then we started talking. And she introduced me to the Carbon Fund. And what the possibilities could be to help reduce some of our energy costs. And I was sold. I was like, yes. I mean, because that's one of our biggest contributing factors on the expense side of our budget. And so any way we can reduce any kind of costs, I'm in favor of, as well as protecting the environment. So.
Well, in the next few moments, we want to get into exactly how that has helped to lower the energy consumption, the carbon footprint also, of Grace Mission Church, how the city of Tallahassee is involved through that community carbon fund, and how it works, how other people might be able to get involved with it. And if you have any questions about what we're talking about here on Perspectives relative to the community carbon fund, energy conservation, reducing the impact on the environment, the number to call is 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We also have an email for your convenience, if that's the way that you'd like to send along your comment or point of conversation or question to us, and that is perspectives@wfsu.org. And you are listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM as we talk about the Community Carbon Fund and what it is doing right here in the capital city area to reduce energy usage and improve the efficiency of same. Give us a call. Boy, so many things we can invest in nowadays. It could be Krugerrands, it could be pork bellies, or it could be carbon. There's a market for that, did you know? Right here in Tallahassee. It's called the Community Carbon Fund, and that is our topic this morning on Perspectives. Your input, welcome to it, 414-1234. As we get up now with Venus Childs from the City of Tallahassee's Environmental Resource and Energy Policy Department. You guys have been all about conservation since, gosh, the early 80s. I remember when the program first kicked off and the city was trying to forestall the need for another power plant. So we got into the energy conservation business. What's going on there now, Venus?
Well, actually, that's our Energy Services Department. But from the Environmental Policy and Energy Resources Department perspective, the way we got involved was that several years ago, staff did a measurement of our carbon footprint for the Tallahassee-Leon community. And we found that power generation and mobile sources were the largest carbon emitters. And so the city manager came back with a New Year's resolution and told our department to develop a carbon reduction plan. So from that plan, we looked at all of our generation from the city. As you know, they repowered Hopkins. We already burned 99% of natural gas. So we were as clean as we can get. After that, we went and we looked at mobile sources. And the mobile sources didn't just cover City of Tallahassee trucks or cars or vehicles. It was basically based off of fuel cells in the entire area. And so what we did, our fleet department jumped on board. They purchased compressed natural gas vehicles, hybrids. We had some vehicles that were at the end of their useful life. They converted those to electric vehicles. So we did a lot of things on the fleet side as well to try to reduce our carbon impact. After that, we went to an anti-idling policy for the city. So then those vehicles, you're not supposed to see any city vehicles idling anywhere. So if they're on a job or in a store or getting lunch, those vehicles are supposed to be turned off. Then we went even further with developing a program called the Idle Free Program. So if you go to the airport or some different places, you may see these Idle Free signs. We ask people to take pledges. So when you are at the grocery store and other places, please turn off your cars and do things like that. So we figured we had covered all the bases from the city's side, but we also needed that community side. Our Idle Free Program and Pledge Program was actually a community-based program. But again, when Sustainable Tallahassee approached us, we figured that was another opportunity to partner with an organization that had far more outreach than we had to the city. And so that's how we got on board.
Wow. Well, Debbie was saying $14 per ton of carbon. That is the going rate right now. So I've got a house, and let's say I in our neighborhood right now, it's coming. That's what they said. We don't have natural gas yet, so we're all electric in my little neck of the woods. And we use around 1,000 kilowatt hours of city electricity per month. So how much carbon does that generate? I know you've got that little cheat sheet that you can go on the web and find out, but is that, you know, a couple tons or a couple hundred pounds or what?
I really can't answer the question about how much carbon is produced by the kilowatt hour that you're using. Again, that's why we refer to the carbon calculator to do that. In my job, doing energy audits, I focus on watts or kilowatts and dollars. And so we measure energy usage in watts and kilowatts. I can convert that to BTU so we can compare one energy source to the next. But I'm never looking at carbon. And that's.
But you're still saving energy through the things that traditionally the energy audit program has done, going in and looking at what's the R rating of the insulation up in the up above your ceiling. If you have a crawl space that needs insulated, double pane windows, maybe upgrading to a new, more energy efficient heat pump, all those kind of things. You guys still do that, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what we did in the case of Grace Mission. I came in and did an energy audit, and we identified what was contributing to their energy use, how much of it was related to lighting or refrigeration or heating and cooling. And then we focused on those things that we could have the most dramatic impact on. In their case, lighting is a very easy one to do because it saves so much energy. It pays back the investment in new lighting systems in a very short amount of time. They had a really bad refrigerator that was certainly adding to their high monthly electric cost, that we were able to get that replaced and make a dramatic difference. Nonprofits like Grace Mission, they operate a lot on contributions. And so a lot of the appliances and things they have were things that have been donated to them from the public. And just because something's given to you doesn't necessarily mean that it's most beneficial to you, because they've been, in the case of this one refrigerator, tied with a very high monthly operating cost for this really old inefficient refrigerator.
It wasn't one of those Energy Star ones, huh?
Oh, no. It's something that had belonged in a convenience store somewhere many, many, many years ago.
Okay, so you went in, you did an energy audit then for Grace Mission Church and said you can do this and this and this and this and this, and that will reduce the energy consumption and, by extension, the carbon footprint. So, Debbie Gibson, why isn't that the end of the story? It sounds like it's a good deal for Reverend Nichols. She gets a break on the power bill, and everything's more energy efficient. She's reduced her carbon. So what more does the Carbon Fund do?
Well, the Carbon Fund actually provided the funds for all of these things to take place. Amanda would have done it had she had the money. She's a mission church. She can't actually run her programs on contributions from her parishioners because they don't have much to give, although they often do give what they can.
Yeah,
she has some really touching stories about the way that her parishioners have reached out. But the Carbon Fund then became the vehicle through which she was going to be able to save that energy and I say the Carbon Fund, it's the Carbon Fund and many, many generous contractors. I was amazed to see the response. Steve Erse really took the lead here in contacting different contractors to come in and give us bids. Lee had done an excellent job of showing us where we were going to get the greatest savings or the biggest bang for our buck, if you will. We don't have a lot of money in the Carbon Fund, and we have several projects we're hoping to complete this year using that money. So we wanted to be as efficient as we could be. He had several people come in and give him bids on changing out the water heater. As she said, they're providing 2,500 meals a month. They have 8 guys that come in and take showers. They have 8 showers a week.
Actually more. We have 8 on Tuesday, 8 on Friday, and 6 on Saturday.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So they have people taking showers there frequently. They wash clothes.
3 days a week, yeah.
So they're using a lot of water, and they were using an electric water heater. So Lee helped us see that gas on demand was going to be a much more efficient way for them to heat that water. In fact, the statistics that Steve worked out were, by changing from electric water heating to gas on demand, they were going to save 1.79 metric tons a year. When he got people to come in, it turns out Watts Mechanical came down. They donated the labor that they would have charged for to this project because they were so impressed with the work that Grace Mission was doing. The refrigeration unit, again, as Lee said, you know, when they did the energy audit, he was able, through these amazing charts that the Energy Smart
E Plus Online.
E Plus Online. So you can go in and actually see what your electric usage is. And he was able to show that at night when the mission was shut down, really what was running was the refrigeration. And when he measured the units, he could tell it was this one. That actually saves 6,500 metric tons a year. Brown's refrigeration came in. He had given us a bid. When he realized what they were doing down there, he actually gave the unit to us at cost. So what we had was this outpouring from the community of wonderful participation, and that's what we're looking for. People in the community that want to do something about global climate change, they feel like they're trying in their daily life, but none of us in the little things that we do are going to make a difference. But we can help by adding our efforts to someone else's to impact somebody like Amanda, who's serving hundreds of people during the course of a month. I live alone. You know, there's just very little I can do beyond what I'm doing here. But by putting my contribution in with those of others from the community, we're able to impact the work that Amanda's doing. And by saving the $2,100 we've calculated she'll save annually, she's going to be able to do so much more at Grace Mission to meet the needs of our less fortunate neighbors.
But you were kind of able to, what, tap into the community carbon fund, kind of like a bank? I'll be saving carbon, therefore I can withdraw from the fund the commensurate amount? Or?
No, it doesn't really work like a cap and trade. It really is a fund where we have money set aside that we can use on projects within the community. We have an advisory council that makes the final recommendation to the Sustainable Tallahassee Board. We have a committee that goes out and does the work, and I sit on both the committee and the advisory council looking for projects that within the community, we feel that we can have a tremendous impact and save carbon. So there's the win for the city. They're not having the electric demand. We impact the ministry at Grace Mission by saving her money and allowing her to use that money for something that more directly benefits the people that she's serving. And then the community itself is lowering their carbon footprint. So,
well, this may be a question then more properly addressed to the city commission or some other policy-making entity. But as long as this is voluntary, and gosh, this sounds like a nice thing to do, and I figure I use X number of tons of carbon a year, so $14 a ton I'll put into the fund. And now I feel all good about myself. But as long as it's voluntary, is it going to work?
Already it's worked for Amanda. So we're hoping today, as people listen, they'll consider maybe this is a way that I can do something extra to contribute. I calculated my carbon the other day. I realized I didn't do it on January 1st. And it cost me $105 to offset my carbon for last year. So it's not really an expensive proposition if you're looking at ways that you can have an impact in the community. Again, it's one of those multiplier effects. You know, I put my money in, the cities put their money in, you know, other concerned citizens are putting their money in, and we're able to go out. And we do have a list of projects that we're interested in completing, not only the one we've done at Grace, but we've also been looking at working with the Bethany Family Apartments, which is an ECHO project, and with the Big Bend Homeless Coalition at their Hope Community Project. Again, Lee's been working very closely with Steve to identify ways that we can save energy out there. And Julian Gnaudis, who's another of the city's excellent energy auditors, I think has been working over at Bethany. But we've got lots of ways that we could have impacts in the community. We just need greater participation. I don't think anybody's going to ever follow your lead here and think that it needs to be something that we're all required to do. It's a voluntary thing.
Yeah, I can imagine the hue and cry should this be tacked onto City of Tallahassee electric bills.
But one of the things we know about the citizens of Tallahassee, and we see that just in the response we've gotten from the contractors we've worked with, is people really want to make a difference, and they want to do what's right. And we know that trying to save energy is the right thing for all of us to do. Whether we believe in global climate change or not, the idea that saving energy is in any way bad is something I don't think anyone would argue. You know, saving energy is good for whatever reason.
Venus is the school district in Leon County also hooked in on this as far as contributions to the fund? Or
Not that I'm aware of. No. You would have to ask sustainability.
I don't believe the Leon County has a very extensive project going to save energy. Manny Joannis is responsible for that project and has made incredible inroads in terms of what they're doing to save energy there. In fact, that's how I got started offsetting my carbon. I was talking to Julian one day, who had worked with me when I was the head of the trustees over at John Wesley United Methodist Church. And I called him about the schools. I worked at Swift Creek. I've been a teacher out there for years. It used to drive me crazy that teachers weren't more conscious of energy. I'd leave at 8 or 9 at night, and there'd be lights on everywhere, and I'd be the only one in the building. So I was trying to get some information from Julian, and I just mentioned to him, because I'd seen that there were some solar rebates coming up, and I said, well, I'm thinking of putting solar panels on my house. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, just a second. And he went to my usage. They've got all these little amazing computers. He could tell exactly how much energy I use. And he said, Debbie, that's really not a good idea. It would take you, I don't know, 25 years, 30 years to get a payback on that. And I said, but it's the right thing to do. And he said, no, Debbie, you need to look at what you're really using. And he said, you've got an old car. What you need to do is take that $25,000 and replace your car. That's where you're going to have the impact. And so Julian really changed the way I looked at energy conservation. Instead of doing what's sexy and the thing of the moment, looking at what you actually use and how you could use it more efficiently is the right thing to do. And in fact, I don't have solar arrays, but I do now have a Prius. Yeah.
Okay. Lee Jones, as far as calculating your carbon footprint and all that sort of thing, before we went on the air, we were chatting out in the lobby about the fact that commercial production of power, even when it's being used the way the Tallahassee does through generation, which is tied to natural gas, which is pretty efficient, and it seems to be cleaner than coal and things of that ilk, really is not the most efficient way to go. So if you have an option of getting natural gas into your house for use with heat-generating appliances, is that a better deal?
Oh, absolutely. What you're referring to is what we call site efficiency versus source efficiency. Because we burn natural gas at our power plants, all the electricity you're using in your home is literally gas by wire. But the process of burning that gas at the power plant is much less efficient than the process of you burning it in your own water heater or at your own stove or dryer. We lose about 61-62% of the energy that we put into a power plant in that process of turning it into electricity and transmitting it down the miles of transmission and distribution wires to your house. You still lose some wasted energy as heat up the flue of your water heater when you use it at your house, but you get about 82% of it converted directly into heating water or heat drying clothes or cooking. So you're saving about 53% of the gas that it takes to make electricity when you burn gas in your own appliance at your house.
Okay, so that is more efficient from the city's viewpoint also. That's more gas
much
available.
Much less gas is burnt.
Yeah, to be used at Purdom or down at St. Mark's or something like that for production.
Absolutely, and that's why the city so strongly promotes the use of gas through our rebates to encourage people to convert to natural gas.
Okay, and we still have all those programs in place as far as those cash or fiscal motivators.
For many tremendous rebates for conversion to natural gas. We still offer rebates for buying energy-efficient electric appliances like refrigerators, freezers, washing machines. And then the city still has some terrific grant programs like paying for adding insulation to your house or for solar water heating.
Low-interest loan program still out there?
One of the most popular programs we've ever had, and it's still going strong.
And how much more efficient are, like, heat pumps, contemporary heat pumps, as opposed to 10, 15-year-old models today?
Well, about 3 years ago, the federal government mandated that the least efficient machine they can make today is a 13-SEER unit, where prior to that it had been a 10-SEER unit. So you've seen a tremendous improvement in efficiencies of heating and cooling equipment. Today, it's most probably the most common systems we see are 14, 15 SEER units, which are 50% more efficient than what they were 10 years ago.
Wow. So it might be I better go and check my heat pump, huh?
Well, the same thing's happened with your refrigerator. And again, with refrigeration at Grace Mission, that was one of the big issues.
We'll talk more about that as we get in to even a deeper consideration of the Community Carbon Fund here on Perspectives. 414-1234-800-926-8809. The numbers to call if you'd like to send us a question or a comment. We'll be right back. Have you made your contribution to the Community Carbon Fund yet? Well, you can. It's up and running, and it is helping to finance retrofitting of some properties in and around Tallahassee that otherwise would be real energy pigs. And it's a good thing to get those pigs out of the trough so that there's more energy available for the rest of us, and also reduces the cost of energy to all of us as we reduce our usage, too. That's what we're talking about here on Perspectives with our expert panel. And the number to call is 414-1234 if you'd like to weigh in, or 800-926-8809 if it's long distance from you to Tallahassee. Bill, hang on the line for just a second. Reverend Amanda Nichols, what happened when you contacted the city of Tallahassee and said, okay, will you guys come out and kind of look at our property at Grace Mission and find out how it can be improved from an energy usage standpoint? What happened?
Well, Lee came out, and Steve was there. Steve Erse was there as well. And they primarily walked through the whole building. I think I might have been part of that tour. And took notes and pulled up all the resources that Lee has available to him through the city, then went back and came up with a report for us, which was about, 15 pages or something, Lee. Very extensive. I was so impressed. And then he explained it all, which was wonderful because this is all new stuff to me. So and then we began talking and having conversations about, well, what would be, like Debbie had said, the biggest bang for our buck as far as where we could see the most savings and reduce our carbon footprint. And so that was identified as well. And so we like to say we're in phase one of that. We have other projects we'd like to do to get even more energy efficient, but this was a big first step.
Yeah, because you don't have a brand-new building.
Oh, yeah. People always say, oh, I remember that was a fish market, or I remember that was the electronics store. And I think it's been there forever. I mean, everybody remembers it. It's been in the community forever. And so it's just a cinder block building with old windows and no true insulation to it whatsoever. And so and not the whole building isn't heated. Only parts are air conditioned as well. And so it gets very hot in there and very cold in there in the wintertime when we have cold winters. So
for total retrofit, Lee, what would we be looking at as far as the investment that would have to be made, you know, out of pocket otherwise?
Well, that's certainly one of the things we considered. There are still many great needs at the building, but a lot of them we identified would take too much of an initial investment and too long of a period of time to get a return on that investment from the energy savings. So we sort of focused on the things that were going to pay back the quickest and have the biggest impact on carbon and energy usage in the building for the least amount of investment. She mentioned in the beginning that one of her first interests was having solar. And she asked, you know, well, how much solar would it take for me to have a zero utility bill? And we figured out exactly how many kilowatts of panels that would take to produce the same amount of power she was using. And it was going to be over an $80,000 investment from them to make their own electricity from solar, and it would have taken many, many decades to have gotten a return on that investment. Some of the needs that are still there, we looked at some of the other refrigeration units. We replaced the one that was the oldest and the least efficient, but we looked at all of them, and we were able to meter them separately and see exactly how much per month they were costing, compare that to what a new Energy Star refrigerator would use today, and we found that, you know, it was still going to take 10, 12, 14 years to get a return on investment of replacing those refrigerators. So it wasn't something that was that important to do right away.
Okay, you're looking at more of a 2-3 year turnaround on this stuff?
Yeah. On this particular project, it's going to pay back in 2 years. It was interesting when they started talking about how much of an array it would take to do the same savings. It was over 10 times the cost of the efficiencies that we were able to put in now and save that energy. So you can see Lee's very good. I mean, I can't say enough about the benefits of having, and they do this for anybody. They do it for our neighbors. They do it for small businesses. They will come in and help you figure out how you can save money on your electricity bill. And that's one of the things that we're concerned about, if you're not spending as much in your utility bill, that means you're not putting as much carbon into the atmosphere, which is what we're all about, is trying to lower that demand.
And less green also coming out of your pocket when it's time to pay the monthly bill.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the city doesn't charge for this. I mean, I was amazed at the specificity of the information that Lee was able to give us
We
tried to make decisions about what was, you know, important to do. And I realized as I'm looking at my notes here, I forgot to mention one of the other people that worked with us. Pastor Amanda and I worked on writing a grant, and she actually received a $2,000 grant from Walmart for the refrigeration. So they're another group that supports the community in really significant ways. They already donate the water that she gives out to the neighbors during her summer water walks. So they're another group that has helped us pull this project together.
I hear partnerships afoot here. Bill's on line one, giving us a call on Perspectives. Hi, Bill.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Hey, we're doing well.
I'm a retired Leon County Schools teacher, and I've got to say, over my 25 years there, I never once heard a mandate about, in particular, turning off your computers at night. It would drive me crazy. I would turn mine off, but then as I was leaving, I'd see all the other ones on as I left school. And I think if it had been a mandate, I would have heard about it. But and you would be surprised how much energy is used for the 18 hours that the kids are gone. The other thing I wanted to say is they switched us over, so we had no control over our thermostat. And be funny, it'd be automatics from somewhere. And you'd come in the morning, on a cold morning, that heat would be on. It'd be blasting. But later on in the day, it'd be 75 degrees, and the air conditioner would have to come on. And we all knew this. You know, we knew that on those days, if we could just, you know, let it be a little chilly in the classroom, it would warm right up. But so I've got to disagree with the statement that the school system's doing everything they can. And I'd love to hear, if there are other teachers out there listening, did their school or principal, you know, suggest that people turn off their computers every night?
Bill, this was an issue that I dealt with a lot as a teacher, and I worked with Bill Piotrowski. One of the things that was significant was this thing that they download these upgrades in the middle of the night. What we wanted to do was make sure everybody turned off their monitors, which is really the biggest energy hog. But Lee's showing that he's got more information than that.
Yeah, I actually worked very closely with Leon County Schools, and they do actually turn off all of their computers in every school now at night, and they do it remotely. They had actually mandated that they be turned off for a period of years, and of course, human nature is only about a third of the people were participating in that mandate. So they actually invested in some software now that allows Mr. Piotrowski to push a button at the end of the day and turn every computer in every school off. Based on some of the metering we did, they've saved almost $800,000 a year now by turning off every computer and monitor at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I understand what he's saying about his experiences in his own school, but from my perspective, and I work assigned as a dedicated rep to Leon County Schools, they have made tremendous efforts in the last 5 years, and they have seen really significant savings in their dollar amounts they spend on utility bills and in the amount of energy they consume.
Well,
that's not my experience, but if you say so.
How recently did that kick in, Lee, as far as Bill having the capability to hit the button?
It's been right at a year now.
Ready to year. And Bill, when did you retire from the
district? About a year ago.
About a year ago. See, you just missed it. Doggone it. I hate when that happens. Thanks for your input, Bill. Appreciate it. Venus, maybe this is one for you here. That kind of also gets us that remote control thing. We hear a lot about demand-side management. Where are we on that? You know, people afraid of the smart meters are going to be turning off our appliances when we don't want them to and all that kind of thing.
Well, actually, again, this is over in the Energy Services Department. But from what I know, this summer we had a demand response program where they're trying to sign up about 100 commercial customers. And what they'll do, they'll actually control their demand during time of peak. So they can actually shut their electricity off or actually lower it during the time of peak, right, to save those megawatts. Supposed to get at least 50. You know how many customers you all have signed up?
Well, it's not necessarily a target of a number of customers, but we're targeting a certain number of megawatts that we want to reduce our peak by.
17 megawatts. Mm-hmm.
With the smart metering infrastructure, it now gives us the tools to do these types of things. And to get back to your point, this will probably never, ever be mandated. This is always going to be a volunteer program. We never want to force somebody into a specific rate, but we want to give them choices so that if they can choose a different rate that's going to be more beneficial to them, they'll take advantage of it. We have the nights and weekends rate that's been available to residential customers for a year or two now. It's completely voluntary. You can choose whether you want to be on that rate or not. And some customers greatly benefit if their home is empty throughout the normal workday and they're primarily using their energy at nights and weekends, then they can save money on the utility bill by participating in that program. For commercial customers, it's a much more robust program and will probably involve us pushing a button somewhere and turning off certain lighting circuits or raising temperatures in certain parts of their building through their building automation system. Or if they have a generator, we'll be able to dispatch their generator and they'll be able to run off their own generator and not have to rely on the city's generator for periods that coincide with the peak demand on our electric system.
Okay, and that this all forestalls the day that you have to bring new generating capacity online. Is that the bottom
That's
line?
That's the whole purpose, is to delay building a new generator.
Okay.
It's cheaper to help you use less energy than it is for us to build a new power plant to serve as much as you want to use.
And we just heard about a court ruling. Now, this is the investor-owned utility situation, but a judge has ruled that it is apparently okay for utilities. Again, not City of Tallahassee, because municipal utilities are totally different from investor-owned utilities. But the Public Service Commission has ruled that on the investor utility side, it apparently is okay for them to charge customers in advance for generating capacity that may not hit for years. So just word to the wise on that. 414-1234 to call Perspectives, and that's the number that Richard in Monticello just gave a ring to. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
Hey.
I just caught part of this conversation. On our farm, 3 years ago, we put in 7,000 watts of solar panels. So that, in many months, that brings our electric bill down to zero. And that powers not only our home, but 6,000 square feet of outbuildings. So it's amazing how good solar is. Then we have a panel that heats our water, so that takes care of a lot of our hot water. And then recently, 2 months ago, we bought a Nissan Leaf. And the Nissan Leaf, even with it, we charge it some with our solar, obviously. So solar goes into it. But if you only... If you only use power off the grid at 13 cents a kilowatt hour, which is what we pay for Progress Energy, this car goes 3.7 miles per kilowatt hour. So if you do the division on that, it works out to the car goes, for $3.50 worth of electricity, it goes 100 miles. 100 miles, and you never put a drop of gas in it. Doesn't have oil change, doesn't have an exhaust pipe, doesn't have a catalytic converter, doesn't have a muffler. Doesn't have spark plugs, doesn't have glow plugs. it's an amazing car. I'm not trying to do an advertisement for the Nissan Leaf, but they have come out of the box right at the start with a car that will go from 0 to 60 in about 6 seconds. You think that it can't get out of its own way? Well, don't press on the accelerator too hard. It's the way that we will go in the near future, electric cars. I can't make gasoline. I can't make diesel fuel. I can't make hydrogen. But we make electricity almost every day. And so when we go down the road, a lot of times we're driving purely on solar power. So,
Richard, it doesn't sound like you're a very good candidate to offset your carbon here. It looks like you've done a really good job already.
That's what we're trying to do. That's what we're... And I'm getting ready to build a geodesic dome here on the farm, several of them, in fact. And geodesic domes are insulated. The whole house is insulated to R50.
That's right.
At R50, you don't gain or lose much heat in a building of that insulating factor. So,
well, congratulations for your example.
Yes, and Richard, you may want to call Commissioner Adam Putnam and see if he wants to kind of hold up your operation out there in Monticello. This is how to do it, boys and girls.
Well, you mentioned Julian, and I know the Julian you're talking about. Julian is and I worked together for a number of years. He's a great guy, and he's probably one of the more knowledgeable people about energy out there. So, I'm glad he's getting around and doing things for y'all.
That's great, Richard. Really appreciate that input there. Okay, guys, is Richard the wave of the future? Is this how we're going to go?
Wouldn't it be nice? Mm-hmm. Until then, I still would like people to call up and or actually go online and see how much carbon they're generating and help us help other places in town. You know, there's a lot of work to be done out at the Hope community. They're looking at going in and putting in the hot water heaters, on-demand hot water heaters out there, gas hot water heaters, changing some of the lights out there. It's an expensive project, and we'd love to have people in the community join us in that effort by offsetting their carbon by contributing to the carbon fund.
Again, for the benefit of folks who may maybe just joined us here on Perspectives talking about the Community Carbon Fund, how does one go about finding out more, number one, and number two, if they are so inclined, making a contribution to the fund?
Well, you can Google Sustainable Tallahassee, which is what I would do. If I knew the website, I'd give it to you, but I don't. I've just gotten lazy, so I just type it into Google and hit I'm feeling lucky. But once you get there, there's one of the hot buttons is the carbon calculator. When you get to the carbon calculator, it'll eventually give you a total, and then you are able to make a donation into the carbon fund to offset that. If you're not willing to offset all of it, you can offset some of it. But contributing to the carbon fund will help us go ahead and complete the project out at the Hope community, and we hope the one at Bethany. Although we've got a good start on it, the city's already put in insulation in all of the apartments at Bethany and brought it up, so that'll see a much more comfortable summer for them, and we hope a pretty large reduction in their utility cost out there.
Okay, so Lee Jones, this is going to help you see this as being an adjunct or a resource for the energy audit program, try to get, for nonprofits particularly, make it more affordable for them to go ahead and do these kinds of retrofits and stuff?
Well, we've had energy audits for, like you said, from back in the 80s, and it's always been a free service. A lot of utilities have always offered energy audits as a way of sort of combating high bill complaints. But there's much more to it than that. And we've, I think, primarily focused on not just addressing your concerns over a high bill, but wanting to show you how to use the things in your house as cheaply as possible, and wanting to identify for you those investments you can make in your house that's going to have the greatest return for you. We also strongly encourage customers that want to help themselves to visit our website and go on to the E-Plus Online feature where you can access the data from your own smart meter. You can see a lot of the charts and graphs that I generated for Pastor Amanda and this project. Yourself. If you don't understand the graphs, then you can certainly call us, and we'll be happy, you know, to help you understand them or to do a free energy audit for you as well.
Okay. And Venus Childs, any final words from you in the environmental energy policy side of the equation here?
No, we just encourage you to be sustainable.
And lower your own power usage and carbon footprint in the process. And dare I say it, Reverend Amanda Nichols, you sound like a believer.
I'm a firm believer and just really grateful that we've had this opportunity to partner with so many people to help reduce our carbon footprint and reduce our electric energy bill.
Always a good thing. Folks, thank you so much for coming in and talking with us on Perspectives today relative to the Community Carbon Fund. I'm going to go check on their website as soon as we're out of here today. Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today by Ken Smith and Michael Fleming on the phones. I'm Tom Flanagan.
8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.